You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey, everybody. We are back with another commission podcast. This is another one from Brian Strader, who, if you remember, is the commissioner of the Babylon 5 podcast.
How could I forget?
And he says he's here back to play TV show dumpster fire roulette once again. I think you paid off handsomely on the Babylon 5 one.
Yep.
I remember thinking, being very impressed with the depth of the story, how well it kind of holds up, like maybe makeup and set design not included on that, but like the themes and all that, and like really saying like, yeah, I can see why a person would be a super big fan of the show. And also that a lot of the science fiction that I enjoyed at the time and still do owes a huge debt of gratitude to, the work they did on Babylon 5. This time he's commissioning Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, the first season, which has to be 20 years old at this point.
Probably.
Because I remember it being a pretty big deal in high school. I remember, like, I think I might have been in my early 20s when it first was released.
2002.
So, yeah we're 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I felt like this show really did show its age, and not just, like, its execution, but even, I don't know. I always hate doing commission podcasts where I'm not just universally enthusiastic about something.
Sure. It sucks to tell somebody that they paid you money to review something
that
you didn't like
they do. Yeah, because the thing that people, I think, really hope happens is it captures their imagination and like we really get into good conversation. And maybe we can find that, because I thought that some of the themes were interesting, but uniformly the execution kept getting in the way. Let me start by the things I liked. I thought this animation was really good. I thought the technical details, like the actual technology displayed, showed a lot of imagination, and it was very detailed. Like, I feel like Western animation is simple but more fluid, and Japanimation is much more technically complex but not nearly as fluid. And I felt like this was one of the more fluid ones I've seen, and also very highly detailed.
Yeah, one of the things that really impressed me about the animation was the movement of the spider tanks, the Tamagotchis or whatever the hell they're called.
Right, you got to feed them. You got to feed them and scoop the poop every couple hours.
You do, but they look real good when they're moving around.
They do.
They had like an otherworldly kind of spidery quality to them. I also like some of the shots that they go for. You know, it's not traditional angles that you would see in just an animated thing. It gives you, well, I'm not talking about the panty shots.
Mm-hmm.
The panty shots are there. They're numerous.
Sure.
Those are not the angles that I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, in episode 11, I think, when he's walking down the hall in the network room or where all those kids are, you know, hooked up. They do kind of this weird panning to show you that it's a big circular, like a big loop, and they just really make it interesting.
There's also, I think, when they're discussing the intercepts. Was that the
interceptors?
Interceptors,
yeah.
Like when the major's talking about it, like there's a fisheye quality, like you're seeing her through some sort of intercept lens or some sort of CCTV. Reminds me a lot of like some of the Wire stuff where it was, you know, you're supposed to feel like you're watching through closed caption television. Because the other like thing I really enjoyed about this is the like in this universe, omnipresent like surveillance seems to be what people take for granted.
Yeah.
you know, which I thought was interesting in context of the Interceptor plotline, because they make it a big deal about, like, oh, how these are essentially bugs that you got to get permission for. But it seems like pretty much everybody can see everything at any time unless you're wearing, like, that thermal imaging suit or whatever that the Major walks around in, so she can become invisible.
Yeah.
So I like that. And I like the broad details of, like, the cyberpunk universe and the blending of, like, you know, the what we would consider modern today with, like, the fantastic technology.
I like some of the philosophical themes they're digging at.
Right. And I think that's where the meat of this podcast is going to come from. But yeah. I found it very hard to relate to a lot of the characters, because I watched the one that's an English dub.
Yeah.
And with the possible exception of the Major, I thought most of the voice work was really bad. And especially when you're talking about the Tamagotchis, or like there is a plot between, like, the spider tank that's gone rogue because it was swilling organic servo fluid,
natural oil,
and it befriended a little girl who's, you know, having trouble dealing with the death of a pet. And, like, those two characters almost killed me. Like,
yeah,
the high-pitched squeaky voices, and who programs these assassin spider tanks to have these childlike personalities that seemed like a poor fit for the characters. Now, I know that, like, you're supposed to, like, this is supposed to be, like, the comic relief, but I don't know. I felt like universally, anytime the spiders started talking, I started really rolling my eyes. I do appreciate that. Because I've been watching some of, like, Full Metal Alchemist, the original series, was one of my kind of, like, landmark anime appreciation moments. I was in my mid-20s, and it was, like, the first kind of series I'd taken seriously, and I was really captured by the animation, the world-building, and some of the, like, ideas about spirituality and religion and the soul and yada, yada, yada that it was on offer. The thing that drove me crazy is they did that chibi shit all the time.
Yeah.
And, like, in the new remake of the series, I think it's even worse. Like, not 2-3 minutes goes by that the Ed or Alphonse isn't turning into
an ice cream cone.
Or their eyes are going spiral, or someone's nose is bleeding, or they're popping the anime equivalent of boners. And it's very distracting. I understand it's a cultural difference.
Yes.
Because I'm not saying it's better or worse. It's just a lot for me to deal with. And that was entirely absent from Ghost in the Shell.
Pretty much, yeah.
They played it pretty much straight. Like, none of the, you know, the spider robots were cutesy, but, like, that's kind of the personality. And none of the other characters did the, like, extreme overreactions and, you know, whatever. So I like the more natural, I guess, storytelling.
Yeah.
But there's just, like, some of that stuff, like, and also there's just a bunch of non sequiturs. Like, in one of these episodes, the Major visits a bartender that is just a big black dude, and they've gave him a voice as an affected, like, Mike Tyson lisp voice, which I guess is the juxtaposition as funny as in real life. Like, hearing Mike Tyson talk is hilarious, but it felt out of place. And also, I didn't know why she was there, who this person was.
So it seems that we may have reached the end of the rope of the things we like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, can we talk about the things we don't like?
Because that's what I've been doing.
Oh, okay, yeah. When you veered that way with the Mike Tyson stuff, I almost universally disliked everything I saw. I think this show gets in its own way so badly that the philosophical ideas they're wrestling with get lost in the mix.
Right.
Because I honestly had a very hard time, and I don't know if it is simply my 36-year-old brain not being able to keep up with this fucking plot, or it being very poorly laid out, and having just a shitload of technical pseudo jargon in there, and not knowing who any of these characters are. I had a super hard time following the plot.
Yeah.
That the Laughing Man stuff, I was constantly 4 steps behind what they were trying to do. And I was always just, like, on the cusp of getting what they were trying to say, but never felt like I actually understood anything.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like,
and I would have shut it off episode two if I weren't paid to watch this, right. Honestly.
And I think that if either one of us had more of a Salinger, J.D. Salinger background, because, like, I guess the whole Laughing Man is, it'd be like, I don't know what it would be like, honestly.
It'd be like if Mad Men relied on you knowing, having read the books that they have read.
Yeah.
And I always felt like in Mad Men, the references were kind of ancillary to
what was
happening.
Yeah, like if you looked
it up
and you understood the reference, you'd be like, I see what
they're
saying.
That's so much deeper than I thought. Whereas in this, it almost feels like a prerequisite to understand Catcher in the Rye and to have read Catcher in the Rye recently enough to remember it.
So after I read what Brian here is saying, I feel like that it's vital to understanding, but also kind of ancillary, because it's essentially the catchphrase and, like, the logo.
Right.
And
it didn't need to be there, but it's so confusing when they drop it in. It's something you feel you should understand.
Because,
and if you don't, you don't feel like you've gotten the full plot.
Because there's, like, the theme there that they played with in, like, that four-episode arc, episode 4, 5, and 6, where essentially the cyber hacker is trying to get, you know, revenge on this corrupt corporation that's doing things I don't really quite understand, that's nefarious. And the idea that, because you're primed to think that this hacker is using this virus to take over people's cyber implants and make them go crazy. But the fact that this guy threatened is like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, he threatened that on such and such a date something would happen, and other people that got into the public consciousness, and it was like a shared delusion, like almost an Orson Welles War of the Worlds kind of thing.
Right.
Like, this guy's saying aliens are attacking. Holy shit, aliens are attacking. So we're going to do a whole bunch of shit that's going to cause a whole bunch of problems. I thought that was a very interesting concept, but it was really buried under all the cyber stuff and the hacking stuff and, you know, some of the techno jargon, because I felt like, well, maybe I need to understand what she means by a whatever virus she's talking about.
Right.
But then actually got on the Ghost in the Shell Wikipedia and I started reading about it, I'm like, well, I could treat this like an inverted polarity phase array on Star Trek.
Right.
But you didn't know that. And I didn't, it also didn't help me out any either. Like, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, this was 60 minutes of story to tell, and I felt like it kept on getting more and more complicated, because there was like a person who was supposed to be posing as this guy, and then he showed up and killed them, and that was supposed to, like, I think bury the investigation, but leaving a body
just opens it up further.
Do that. Yeah. So the whole time I'm second guessing the show, thinking that, like, maybe this was going to come together at the end, but it never did. And also, like, there's a lot of, like, dense exposition at the end of these episodes, where, like, the major and
not even just at the end. It's the setup. It's everything.
And they give it in this very fast, flat effect. Like, there's no time to let the dialogue breathe.
No.
It's just machine gun style. And, like, maybe the major was okay, but I thought that the guy who played the rookie and Bat-Tao and the boss, I think it's Bat-Tao, the guy with the beady little eyes.
Yeah.
They don't deserve whatever paycheck they got for the voice work on this.
I just think the I don't know if this plays better in Japanese, and the ferocity, the velocity of exposition is better in the native language. But I honestly, like, I never caught my breath. I never caught my breath in this entire 6 episodes.
Yeah.
Or I guess actually in the Laughing Man arc.
Right.
I was never able to catch my breath.
Well, I remember, like, when I was watching Full Metal Alchemist, I eventually started preferring the subtitled version.
Yeah.
Because I could keep up with reading the words, and then, you know, the original actor's performance was then telling me the emotion. But, like, with the dubbed versions, you just have a person. I don't know how these anime dubbers work. Like, whether they get in a sound booth and they're given a telephone book to read, and someone puts a gun to their head and says, if you don't get this done in 30 minutes, I'm going to blow your fucking brains out. Because what I found universally with these dubs is that the American tries to jam in every bit of the stilted translation of the words, but a lot of the cultural context... gets left out, and all of the emotion.
Yeah.
So I'm left with, you know, kind of, you know, very highly detailed but basic animation of people's faces to convey things, and it was hard for me.
Yeah. And I don't even think that the problems with following the plot stop there. I think there are so many, the plot becomes so complex so quickly as mm-hmm. well over the course of, you know, four episodes that I think are part of the main Laughing Man arc,
mm-hmm.
as many factions and potential villains were introduced and killed, you know? And these are very short episodes. These are 20-minute episodes.
Right.
Each. So the rate at which you have to learn and then synthesize that into your already limited and tenuous understanding, or at least my experience, mm-hmm. Is too fast.
Well, the other thing I felt like is that this was very much a film of a time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the fact that, you know, this is purports to be 2030 and we're like 12 years away. And what's interesting to me is, like, I feel like that a lot of people in the 90s were like making predictions on the future to where we would continue like some sort of physical mastery of the universe and our technological understanding would be increasing. But what it seems like actually happened was the creation of the internet spurred like an information mastery. Like information and people's behaviors, and that's the stuff that, like, you know, why does Facebook need to hack our brains if we will willingly give them all of our important relationships and moments and personal data and all that stuff, and they can just, like, they don't need to hack our brains. We'll just give it to them for free.
Yeah.
If we can play Farmville and, you know, see how grandma's, our ex and girlfriend looks in a bikini now, and, you know, or see how fat they've gotten, or like, you know, that's, we will gladly give away these things that used to, like, movies used to really wrestle with, like the integrity of your consciousness and your internal thoughts and your privacy.
Yeah.
Like, we just, you know, like, nobody saw that coming. Like, if they, and you, that's that, like, if I'd seen this 16 years or 18 years ago or whatever, and things like The Matrix and Black Mirror and things like that that had more interesting and salient points about, like, the intersection of technology and humanity hadn't come along, like, this would be, I think, probably remain more visionary.
But yeah, unfortunately, if they had stopped making predictions, yeah, were more accurate.
Right, but unfortunately, I think the real world kind of diverged, and a lot of this is problems in, like, Blade Runner, too.
Mm-hmm.
Blade Runner as well, I should say. But, like, as the real world kind of devolved over where they thought it was going to go, and, like, the philosophical things that we wrestle with changed, the technology changed, like, this is now... Again, if I saw this as a teenager, I think it would be mind-blowing, because what other place are you going to get exposed to these ideas? Like, if I go back mm-hmm. to, you know, 2000, 2002... You know, you had The Matrix and, you know, Johnny Mnemonic and things like that that were kind of outlandish and weird in their own ways. And
yeah, that was right in my prime zone.
The, like, idea that, like, people would have religious objections to, you know, cyberization.
Right.
Which would have been even a better, like a, and this is where, like, Brian's probably, you fuckers, when I commissioned this almost 2 years ago, Altered Carbon didn't exist. But Altered Carbon exists, and it's like, remaking this thing with a better eye to where the issues actually are and what the things actually scare us about, like, modern society.
Yeah.
It's not the fault of this work. Like, I can, and, you know, if I think about, like, maybe how much of this is just bad translation and a bad performance of the translation.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because, like, was it, like, really herky-jerky, or if I knew more about the, you know, like, it's not just, like, Japanese culture. Like, shit, I was ignorant about the Catcher in the Rye stuff. That's the one, like, important book that I managed to get out of my accelerated reading program of Mooresville High School without being exposed to. Because I'm just like, I don't understand what any of this stuff was. And then when I read Brian's email where he's laying it all out, I'm like, okay, it kind of makes sense, kind of doesn't.
Yeah, I think, like, so I saw Ghost in the Shell, the original movie, right, way back about the time that I saw The Matrix, right?
Right.
And Brian's talking about how this was kind of that for him. Mm-hmm. Like, he had seen The Matrix, but these were, like, eye-opening kind of ideas for him. And I think the original Ghost in the Shell movie was also that for me alongside The Matrix and stuff. And I think if I had seen this at the time that it aired and I was, you know, 20 years old and just coming off of, like, the movie and The Matrix and still embroiled in that stuff, this would play a lot better to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, having, you know, that big gap, like you said.
Well, and then, like, I remember when the Ghost in the Shell, Scarlet...
the movie, the live action.
Yeah, Scarlet Joe in the Shell came out. I watched the first movie, the anime movie.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, and I remember, like, I can't remember which I did first, but I remember, like, thinking, like, oh, no, because this wasn't what I was expecting at all. Like, the visuals lived up to the billing, but the actual ideas and stuff did feel very elementary compared to where we are now.
Sure.
Again, seeing 4 seasons or 5 seasons of Black Mirror and all the Matrix and, like, all the cyberpunk that's come out before and since, like, the conversations move further along, and I don't have any of the underlying affection for the source material. Because it's like when I was reading Brian, because he has got 4 bullet points of the stuff that he found annoying about the series on rewatch. and just the stuff that we were talking about, like the major going around in long lingerie for no fucking reason is very hard to take seriously in 2018.
How about when she fucking steps out of that spider tank that she's in?
Right.
And it's just a full on crotch from behind,
just right
underneath.
Up her,
like,
yeah. And she's just showing it all. She's bent over into, like, a head down, ass up position in this, like, weird...
It's just straight up her cooch. Like,
yeah.
Come on.
And she's just like... And the thing is like, I'm like, okay, so what is the horseshit explanation for this? Does the magic image blend technology only work if you're wearing this weird techno corset or... Because the reality is... She's the only one dressed like this.
Yes.
She is dressed like a sex bot from an Austin Powers film, and no one acknowledges it.
So she is 90% bot? Like,
more than that. Yeah. Like, I guess she's like entire... There is no original part of her left. She's an entire... That's the whole thing. The only thing left in her is her ghost, which is... That's the other thing, like... Well, the concept of the soul is, like, hard for me to take in a techno.
It's whatever makes us quintessentially human.
If they translate it as a consciousness, like, what it's a human consciousness, but how, from a major's perspective, that's, like, one of the interesting things is, like, you know, how does she know that she's real? How does she know that she's not entirely fabricated and simulated and just used as, like, a smart robot that they give a backstory so they don't go crazy or whatever?
Well, that's the thing. She's wearing the same as... a lot of other bots that you can see in the background that I assume are just like her, mostly.
Is she?
Android.
Because I didn't see, like, background lingerie bots.
A couple of them, yeah.
But are they secret agents as well, or are they, like, sex bots? Because the thing is,
probably,
like...
Probably sex bots,
I feel like nobody really acknowledged it, the fact that, like, she is a person, and everyone else is dressed like 20th century humans. Like, they're wearing suits and ties and trench coats, and there's this girl in a corset and sometimes a leather jacket.
Yeah.
And sometimes she's got a full military uniform on. So, like, why does...
No, I mean, she's oddly sexualized. Like, there's that scene where she has to go connect to the network or watch the news to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
And she does it in a VR helmet, which, A, is inexplicable to me because she's a fucking robot, basically.
Yeah.
So she puts on a VR helmet, but she's laying in bed with another woman and then...
Who is dressed completely like a sex doll.
Yeah, who's dressed like a Japanese... sex maid, whatever. And then she turns on the big TV, which I don't know why she didn't do that in the first place.
Right,
and there's another woman in there who's maybe also a sex...
She's
weirdly sexualized.
Like, we didn't know. And it was all, like, very...
But this,
like,
is Japan, right? In 2002.
Like, yeah, but on the other hand, like, it's like, that's part of, like, the value of going back and looking and being like, huh, yeah.
Oh, sure. I'm not saying I want Japanese culture here in America and everything's A-okay. I'm just saying, that's part of their culture.
But, like, beyond that weird sex, was that scene was weird because, like you pointed out, she's wearing a VR helmet, but inside the VR helmet world, she's watching a video feed from a television. Like, it's literally, like, you can see the chyrons scrolling on the side. Like, she's watching a broadcast of a television.
And part of the point of having a fucking cyber brain in the first place is you're constantly connected to the network.
She could just take that little RCA cable that she's got and just plug it into the thing that she wants. So why does she have to go to...
She's wireless. Like... That's the thing. She's connected
right
psychically, but technologically to her cyber brained friends.
Right.
That doesn't connect to a fucking TV network somewhere that you can get news on.
Right.
An RSS feed. Maybe you can grab some stories from. What the fuck?
Yeah. It's
and
almost
then
like
she jettisons the VR helmet and watches it on a huge ass screen.
Right.
Why didn't she go to that in the first place? What's the helmet for?
So it was an excuse to get her to that girl's apartment. It's got the sweet VR rig.
I guess.
So they can have some cheesecake porn, but without it being cheesecake porn.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, like I get it why if I'm a 17-year-old boy, I would not have any problems with that. But as a 40-something dude, I'm like, huh, that is that I wonder how. Anyway. He thought the opening looked kind of aged with the CGI, which I didn't think it looked that bad.
I mean, it doesn't look great.
Right, but it's like I always set my expectations, like, you know, this is almost 20 years ago, the CGI is going to be at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
He also said the plots are overly complex with random NPCs coming out of nowhere, Japanese government references and army organization references, and finally, his too much exposition, lots of tell rather than show.
Too much.
Which are exactly the things that we're talking about. I think the only difference is, like, again, Brian was a 17, 16, whatever-year-old boy when he watched this.
Mm-hmm.
And we unfortunately watched it as grown ass men. Because, like, that's the thing. Like, I've gone back and watched G.I. Joe, Transformers, He-Man. That shit does not age well.
No.
Like, old boy might have a lot of crimes to answer for. Cinema. Who's the guy that did The Rock and Michael Bay? Might have a lot of sins to answer for, but fucking up Transformers isn't one of them.
It was kind of fucked from the beginning.
It's just silly. It's a show for children they try to back into selling toys and like when you see it as that, it's like makes perfect sense. But
and Ghost in the Shell is a show for adolescent males,
right?
Like that's just what it is.
I'm not saying that there's not women that would see like a strong, literally strong, indestructible thing like, you know, like the Major and not enjoy it, but like they have to, any woman that enjoys this has to look past the obvious and crass sexualization of the Major.
Uh-huh.
I mean, thank God, like, I don't think that any of the, like, it's kind of interesting that none of her squad treats her like there isn't anyone that's like wolf whistling or doing that in the foreground. Which I guess makes it a little bit easier to overlook, but you do.
They're just groping her on the train when they're heading home.
Sure, something like that.
That's the Japanese way.
All right, I want to talk about his actual thoughts about the episodes themselves.
Okay.
And again, I'm super sorry, Brian. I really feel bad for not liking this as much as you do. The episode 2 standalone. That's the other thing that's interesting is like this. It's called the standalone complex, and each episode is labeled either standalone, which is a single adventure. That's 20 minutes and that's it. Mm-hmm. Versus the complex, which is the continuing evolution of the Laughing Man plot. This first one was Testation, and it's essentially about a guy who grows up to be an AI researcher, and he's got some sort of physical condition that they could solve by putting him into a synthetic body, but his parents were strongly religious and forbid him from doing that.
But he found the loophole.
So on his deathbed, he somehow loaded himself into a tank, and, you know, this tank goes rampaging out into the countryside, and then the team stops it because they think he's going to go to his parents and kill them. And the very last reveal that's supposed to blow your mind is the fact that this kid just wanted to show his robot body to his parents and be like, it's still me and this is okay.
Yeah.
As the not-so-proud owner of a religious fanatic parent, that's not going to go the way you want it to, dude.
No.
You're not going to show up in a horrifying spider tank and be like, look, Mom, I'm not a demon. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
That's fair.
But I don't know.
No, like, it seems like a pretty a weird thing. I'm not even sure how they would view it from the structure of the show itself. Like, so he dies, right? Mm. And he says, like, this is the loophole because I no longer have a ghost because it's, like, claimed by God, whatever. Mm. He no longer has a ghost because he's died.
Right.
Then what
Which
is going
I don't even
in,
know what that means.
Then what the fuck is going into that robot? And
his
why would your parents accept it as you if the thing that makes the Major a human is her ghost?
Right.
Like, you've just lost the only tenuous grasp on humanity that you had.
Right. But I think
so now you're full robot.
But we might have misunderstood that, because wasn't there some comment from like one of the Tamagotchis that mentioned it was a ghost? Or no, I'm confusing that with the virtual movie.
Box. Yeah,
the box. Uh-huh. The thing he says on here is, even though I said I couldn't help but get your take on something or this episode with its religious angle. Any thoughts on the percentage of population given the opportunity to cybernize would refuse to do so if given the opportunity? He says, you think the wage class gap is bad now? Can you imagine how far behind you'll be if you don't cyberize with everyone else? That's interesting, because like I've thought about like that and the gap between the haves and have nots. Like, if you can afford for your children to be augmented so they're three times smarter than the average person, have perfect recall, and the poor people can't, well, guess who's getting the best and most important jobs solely on merit? But it's a meritocracy you can buy. It's a pay to win model.
Yeah.
I never considered that, like, until, you know, we saw stuff like Altered Carbon and whatnot, that people would just object over philosophical religious grounds. Like, well, I just don't want that because it gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Those people would still be left behind.
But it's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, if you have religious fundamentalist parents, it's a massive handicap because you're probably not going to go to college. You're going to start off your adult life with a bunch of horrifyingly backwards ideas. Like, add that, plus now you have a physical gap between your peers and how that would stack up over generations, you know? Like, these communities get poorer and more aggressive in background, and
yeah, I mean, it would require some serious regulation to figure out that mess.
Right. But, you know, I don't feel like the episode raised that question. It's certainly there to, like, think about, but, like, I wish the show had done a better job of, like, I guess, framing it in those kind of ways. Or, like, I felt like everyone in the universe, with curiosity, had not much opinions on the things going on. It's like they're very detached. Mm-hmm. Like, there was an urgency, like, goddamn, society's falling apart because this laughing guy is going around and hijacking cyber brains and taking over TVs and starting assassinations. It's just, like, idle curiosity, the way you would read, like, page 10 of the, you know,
Kama Sutra,
local, like the local section of the news, like, oh, this is like, oh, the mall got canceled because they weren't able to raise taxes. Like, interesting. It's weird, right?
It is.
I mean, I guess the major's a robot, but she's supposed to be human too. So
yeah, there's supposed to be something in there.
Yeah. He talked.
I do take some serious issue with their categorization of terrorism in that episode. Apparently theft when combined with joyriding is terrorism.
Right. Yeah, the major says, well, if you think about it from a certain point of view, like, okay, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
No, when I think about it from every point of view, it's not.
I mean,
it's not.
When you think about it, Ferris Bueller's Day Off was just a ISIS manifesto.
Right.
Of,
look at
of
the terror.
Property theft and joyriding combined.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, there,
that's pretty fucked up.
It's a weird, because, like, I'm like, that had to be a bad translation.
I assume so.
Like, in the original, she's making some reference about the Yakuza or something, and it came like, you know, well, what the hell's a Yakuza? I don't know. Like,
Joyrider.
Joyrider, yeah. Like, it's like, there's no fucking way the major could, because everyone around her would be like, are you fucking crazy? Yeah.
With the shit we deal with on the daily basis, you're calling this guy a terrorist?
Oh, yeah. Like, maybe if you are stealing someone's brain or joyriding in their body, that's terrorism, but, you know,
I mean, to that individual, but on a broader sense, I mean, terrorism has to have some effect on society at large, and I don't feel like stealing a car and joyriding qualifies.
Right. There's had to be something lost in translation. Yeah. There's your Scarlett Johansson connection. So episode 4, 5, and 6, he had us watch as a unit, which is Interceptor, Decoy, and Meme. Says, I find the idea of the standalone complex fascinating, as if there's some kind of collective unconscious guiding people to perform the same acts on their own without communication. Do you guys think this is a real thing?
I think it could be. We've probably had some examples that I just can't think of.
Like, I'm thinking we might be building up to something, because I don't think you can keep talking shit about journalists and inciting as much anger and rage in the media and not have that go bad places eventually.
Yeah.
So, like, you could get into a situation where everyone could plausibly say, well, we didn't say to go and shoot up this place or that place, but that is the proximate cause. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if Like it'd be interesting to see, like, if because, like, the analogy here would be, like, if someone, like Anonymous said, like, yeah, like, Anonymous released a video and said, we're going to assassinate Elon Musk on November 11th for his crimes against British aquatic spelunkers. They shouldn't call that guy a pedophile. And they didn't actually do it. It was just a joke.
They never had any plan to do it.
But then on November 11th, some crank wearing a Guy Fawkes mask, because he's seen, you know, fucking the Guy Fawkes movie. He's seen the V for Vendetta, and he's seen the video, and he's heard this, like, the press is endlessly talking about it, and, like, a guy shows up and blows Elon Musk away. Is Anonymous responsible? Like, that's... Right. I kind of think we could see stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that there's even, like, the idea of, could it happen without any direct communication?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that's not quite the issue they're raising, but I do think somebody says that. Like, there was no communication.
Right.
This just happened.
Like, that would be, like, if five people simultaneously came to kill Elon Musk.
But I think even that's possible. Like, if...
Sure.
Because people are affected by things in their lives, whether they realize it or not. And to draw similar conclusions from events happening in society, I think that could definitely happen.
Right.
Something where you don't even need somebody to incite to say that something's going to happen for it to happen.
Well, like that Slender Man thing we were talking about on Sharp Objects, where some girls took an internet legend and then independently decided to murder this other girl, or try to murder this other girl.
Uh-huh.
Like this idea, like the episode's called Meme. Well, in that case, a meme literally led to someone almost being murdered.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess that is interesting and prescient. And I could see something like that happen if enough people like so in this world, people are obviously cyberization. They've got mixed feelings about it. They got maybe strong religious feelings about it. You hear about this corporate corruption, and people are so angry that, you know, multiple people show up to do the job. Yeah, I don't know. Is it a real thing? I think it's arguable that it's already happened, and he was given some, he actually mentioned Anonymous 4chan as an example of that, too. And he also mentioned that the echo chambers created by social media can cause that, too, because people just get more and more, and there's just no one that says, like, hey, now, wait a minute. We're not really talking about shooting these people, right? It just builds and builds and builds and gets angrier and angrier and angrier. All right. He then told us to watch episode 12 standalone. This is the Takakoma spider robot runs away, which is, I think, the English title is Escape from. I'm not sure which is the English title, which is the Japanese title. But this is the one where the spider robot runs away, and which I thought that whole plot I didn't think was very interesting. There's a little bit of like creep factor of this childlike intellect, like not understanding the value of life. But I've seen Short Circuit. I've seen Johnny Five step on a grasshopper and Ally Sheedy lose her fucking shit about it. So this Japanese girl being mad that the spider robot just tossed his dog over its shoulder.
It was fucking funny.
It was funny, right?
Like, it wasn't.
They went for broke on animation, too. That dog got snatched and thrown.
More frames in that 2-second shot than the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
I don't find it the same way that Brian finds it in his description of the dog.
Mm-hmm.
What does he say about the dog? Because he says something like it's tragic.
The Takakoma tossed away the dog because it wasn't necessary. It's chilling.
Chilling is not how
the concept
hilarious.
Is chilling. The fact that robots don't understand empathy and emotion and pain.
Right. What if
and,
this were a human baby? What if this were like? Sure, I get all that, but goddammit, it was funny.
Also, wasn't it weird that as the AI is saying like, "Nope, I don't understand death, and I don't get human emotion." Like it's weeping oil. Like, are we supposed to understand that it?
That was the malfunction.
It's feeling
I think,
things,
from the natural
but
oil.
Since it doesn't know what to call it, that
I suppose so, but it's also kind of mixed up because, like, there's this moment where she's walking down the street, the little girl, and the spider bot's behind her. She goes up to a food stand, mm-hmm. and she says, I'm going to get one of these for Lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tamagotchi looks up at the sign, which I assume says dog meat,
mm-hmm.
and then says, you probably don't want to do that, which is a profound understanding of, like, mm-hmm. emotion and what a dog gives a shit about. Like,
right.
It's just a weird thing for this bot to do and then casually toss the dog on its fucking head.
Right. But then again, you're making a lot of assumptions about the signage and all that, right?
What else could it be?
I don't know. Because I honestly, I thought that was a, I thought that was some weird thing that I just didn't get.
I think it was a essentially a cannibalism joke.
They don't sell dog meat in the streets of Japan, do they?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
All right.
But I don't know what other context to put on that.
Right. He continues, as film critics, I thought you would appreciate the film director's short story. It's the ultimate story of people distracting themselves from reality, that they give up their own lives for that distraction. So if you found the cyber train of Damon Lindelof that constantly produced new, or cyber brain of Damon Lindelof that constantly produced new episodes of Leftovers and never got stale, how long do you think you'd stay inside his brain? I mean, this is like a mini Matrix thing. If you could live a life that was constantly intriguing and mentally stimulating and fulfilling on some level, would you ever leave? Mm-hmm. And I don't have great answers for that, because I've actually been thinking about, like, you know, Huxley's Brave New World, and if you could build a society in which people didn't want, because they were chemically drugged and they all their needs were supplied and they felt pleasure constantly, I mean, what is the point of humanity? Is the point, if the point of humanity is maximizing happiness, that's a very valid strategy.
Sure.
If you start messing with axioms that's not maximizing happiness, then what the fuck are you doing? Like, what is the secret sauce there? What's your definition of the goal that which humans should aspire to?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking the other day about, you know, some of the goals of humanity, and I think you brought up a point that part of the goal has to require sacrifice, because in order to make things better for everyone, some people are going to have to sacrifice, right? So it can't be simply that one vector of maximizing for happiness.
Right.
It can't be. Otherwise, you get stuck in the Middle Ages and you never progress,
right,
because everyone's as happy as they think they can be.
Right, right.
So somewhere along the road, you have to say this other vector is also important. Progress. Technological progress.
Because trying new things
progress,
lead to
whatever.
Failure. Failure is not fun, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And somebody has to give up something for that.
Right, right.
So I don't know.
Unless you can promise an unbroken string of successes that are all, but then again, now you're starting to, I don't know,
you're still not as happy as you could be, right? Because maybe there's some advance.
Well, and there's also the
happier
theory that, like, you do have to go through some amount of pain and sorrow to even appreciate, because what is happiness, what is a default state of happiness if you never experience pain and loss,
right?
Like, the contrast between the two is what gives you, you know, the hot fudge and the vanilla ice cream is what makes a sundae interesting. If it's just hot fudge or just vanilla ice cream, they're much less interesting.
Sure, and your boredom with eternal happiness could essentially turn into a hell, right?
Sure, yeah. There's plenty of digital ink spilt on that, too.
Yeah. What I honestly thought was going to be in that box when Tachikoma interfaced with it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be porn. I honestly expected, because there's this weird scene a couple of episodes before that where they're trying to investigate the Laughing Man, and they go into an office and this guy's just watching fucking porn on his screen while he's having this casual conversation.
Yeah.
I honestly expected it to just be naked ladies.
This would be naked ladies or naked dudes.
They don't really seem to do that on this show, but sure.
Then finally, episode 11, Complex, The Forest of the Imagos, or Portraits. So this is the last of the Laughing Men episodes that I saw. The conceit of this episode is there's a home for children that have been cyberized, but then like get like almost a locked in syndrome where life on cyberspace is so much more interesting than anything they can get up to in the real world that they never want to leave.
Yeah. It's a self-imposed kind of thing.
And then they have like, but there's where like I start losing the plot, because like the rookie got sent there to investigate some, you know, stuff that he was there to investigate, and he definitely sees like where the orderlies and the staff are mistreating the children, but I didn't see that was intrinsically tied to the overall theme.
So there was, as I understand it, there was a theft of information from some ministry that happened from this location. And I think they're one and the same, right? They weren't supposed to be hooked up to the network. And so they don't know how the information got out. And then somewhere along the investigation, once he gets on the inside, you find out that there's this person named Chief that's very secretive, that turns out, I think, to be this Aoi guy,
right,
who has the catcher mitt.
Yep.
And that's where I lost it. That's where, right, I lost the thread. I'm like, what does this Howie guy have to do with anything?
Is he the laughing man? Is he like?
I mean, if this is the capper, then I assume so.
They also I don't know that just might. I don't know, because what I didn't understand is, like, because they talked about maybe the laughing man being a composite person, and then there was just that weird line between the kids where he was abandoning them because he's their hero of sorts. Mm-hmm. This cyber guy, this chief guy. And he's like, yeah, I got to leave because X, Y, and Z. And the child's like, oh, well, at least leave us something to remember you by. But
he leaves that glove, I guess.
I guess. But like, if he erased all their memories of him otherwise, then what are you remembering? You've got a glove that just is a baseball glove.
Right.
You know, and
then at the end, the agent from Section 9 draws the Laughing Man symbol.
Right.
When he tries to recall
what he looks like,
what Owie looks like, what Owie looks like. So,
which is weird, because I thought the whole thing. I mean, I was told by Brian that the whole thing about the rookie is that he is has almost no cyberization at all.
Huh. Okay.
And that's the other thing, is like they assert that the Laughing Man uses everyone's pervasive cyberization to replace his face with like the Laughing Man logo. But they also say that a sizable percentage of the population resists cyberization because of whatever reason, socioeconomic, religious. And you're telling me there's no one in the audience? And then that's the other thing, is like, there's a couple of things I'm like, come on, pull the other one. Like, where they show the police sketch of the Laughing Man logo. And I'm like, I mean, it's a minor point, but I'm thinking, like, what police artist gets to the end and like, well, what the hell? I've just drawn
this the face.
This is just a fucking hat with the logo on it. Like, what? Like, at what point is he like, okay, buddy, whatever?
They're not doing their eyes don't roll in the back of their head.
And they
while
said it was
drawing,
a police composite sketch, as if they interviewed like 100 people and they all told this, and they just drew this logo.
Well, it was
and, like,
two, I think. So in that episode, don't they say like there were two homeless people who are witnesses and don't have any cyberization? But then I think this goes in with the memetic factor of it all. Mm. They told the guy to draw this Laughing Man symbol, maybe because they're sympathetic to taking down the big corporations.
Because that's the thing. So why draw it when, like, every TV feed had it? Like, you could just...
Right.
You know...
take a picture of it.
Exactly. But I thought that was weird.
It was super confusing.
I do think, like...
the last episode.
So Brian says, this episode almost plays like a standalone episode, warning about the unintended consequences of cyberization. I also see parallels between this and how technology used by children is being more closely studied as well. I mean, I definitely think that is the age-old adult concern of these kids with their video games and their hacky sacks and their iPads and their tablets and all that stuff being dangerous.
Yeah.
And I tried to do, like, you know, when I was raising my son, I tried, because, like, people were like, you know, you should really limit screen time. And, like, before the three, they probably shouldn't have any of this kind of stuff. And, you know, I tried to do all that stuff right. And now I've got a kid who plays video games at pretty much the same rate I did as a kid, which is as much as I will let him.
Yep.
Like, if I let it up to him, and I think he would play video games from morning until night. Now, the thing is, I don't know that it's actually true, because, like, I wish I had the balls to just do that as an experiment, just, like, take, like, a 3-month block and be like, go nuts. I'm not going to put any limits, because I kind of feel like after a few days or weeks, they'd be like, well, this is boring. Except I know a lot of adult friends that essentially, if given the choice, will plug into video games and not do, they'll lose their jobs. They'll flush their academic careers away. It's every bit as damaging and destructive. I've seen World of Warcraft, in particular, destroy a life as sure as heroin has ever done.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe there is something to enforce moderation of kids who can't really tell right from wrong and meaningful from unmeaningful.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one side of it. The other side that I couldn't help but notice is nobody bats an eye when they talk about this whole facility essentially being a child slave camp.
Right.
A labor camp. Look at what these kids are doing. They're developing new barriers, as they call them, mazes for barriers that then the government comes along and uses on their crypto systems for cyber mines.
Right.
Like,
which they need because, like, the fact that people are hacking into people's brains is fucking scary.
The reg, yeah. It happens all the time.
Yeah, they say it's like, well, it's only Class A terrorists. Well, number one, I played enough Japanese video games to know, watch out for the Class S terrorists.
Oh, yeah.
Because they'll just take your Class A and shit on it.
For sure.
But, like, even if it's just Class A, it's happening too often, man.
All the time.
That's a good reason not to, like, forget God and what he thinks about it. I don't want someone hacking my brain.
Yeah, no, but I couldn't really abide the child slave labor. Hmm. That was rough.
Yeah. So,
I did think that the thing that happens when the kid challenges the rookie to look into, to, like, go into this guy's brain, mm-hmm. and he says, oh, yeah, another consciousness went in and got lost in there and stuck. And then he looks at his neck holes or whatever, his ports, and the eyes flip up. I thought that was creepy.
Yeah. That honestly, all the plugging and unplugging and all that stuff, and that, like, the major can, like, she plugged in that tank and just killed it.
Yeah.
Like, she just killed a human life, and that was it. Like, that's, I mean, that's the same thing with Altered Carbon, the idea that you can have a person in a little silicon disc and snap it in half and you just kill the person.
Yeah.
Like,
it's fucked up.
Like, it's so much easier than, like, pulling the trigger or, you know, snapping the neck. Yeah. And there's, and it's the, we talk about dehumanization, but you can't be more dehumanized than literally being on, like, an isolinear chip.
Yeah.
Like, is that, like, you know, and there's, like, weird, like, that's the thing, like, that's the thing about Altered Carbon that I think works 100 times better than, like, Ghost in a Shell, because, like, they can do something just by going through, like, a museum of, like, war, like, this particular war, and there's, like, a acrylic cylinder that's just stacked with discs. And those aren't dead bodies. Mm-hmm. Those are entombed souls.
Yeah.
They're there for... It's like, it'd be like a tour at a Holocaust museum, and there's still Jews burning in the ovens.
Yeah, it was one of the most striking things in that show.
Right.
Honestly.
Right. So, and there's, like, all kinds of fucked up stuff, and I guess that's the thing I was looking for, but... It's not fair to say an 18-year-old anime is going to have those same things, because the worlds move on. And the thing is like, I also realized the irony of talking about something that was so influential to other works as being, like, passé, but that's what happens, right?
Yeah. I mean, naturally.
Like, you know, who goes back and plays the original Castle Wolfenstein, even though either that or whatever, like, some people come flying in, Ultima, but, like, who plays that original VGA 256 color bullshit version when you can play, you know, I don't know, what's the hot first-person shooter game right now? It's not Destiny. Fortnite. No, it's third-person called. Yeah, whatever. Like, nobody goes and pays homage and respect to it. And that's so weird because, like, I mean, that's a reason, like, video games tend to be like a kind of a cultural wasteland, because really serious connoisseurs go back and watch Citizen Kane and Gone with the Wind, and even Birth of the Nation, as fucked up as it is, to be like, you know, look at all these, it's interesting, look at these foundational blocks. But, like, in video games, that doesn't really happen. Maybe it's because it's not mature enough, that you don't have 16, 17-year-old dudes navel gazing about 1970, like Pong, like they're going to talk about Pong. Right. Like, look at this.
What did Pong say about our culture? Yeah,
right.
It's starting to happen. Yeah. I think now that we have some 40, 50-year-old gamers who,
sure,
that's become their life.
Grew up in that milieu.
Yeah.
And you're right. That's the thing. It's like, you can't compare something that's been going for 100 years to something that's really taken off in the last 25, 30. But
yeah.
So, I don't know, Brian. I hope we gave you your money's worth of analysis. We did watch it, and
We held up our end of the bargain. We watched it, and we talked about it.
We did. We talked about the themes and what we thought about them, and it would be interesting to see, like, a modern remake where they just essentially sweep away all the continuity and take the concepts and put fucking pants on the major and... Because, you know, like, Altered Carbon, its problem is some of these things are so fantastic, they're hard to show in real life.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of like, that was so impressive about The Matrix. Like, they brought things like Ghost in the Shell onto the big screen. Mm-hmm. So, seems like there's an opportunity for the animation to steal it back. Like, you thought that was next level? Well, we're going to go next level. And we're going to talk about things, and we're going to, like, take Black Mirror concepts and do anime execution and really blow your fucking minds so that... You know, dudes 20 years later can shit on it after the ball has been moved even further.
Yeah.
But no, I appreciate you know, the commission and your support of Bald Move. You're 1 for 2 in the whatever wasteland roulette you're playing, dumpster fire television roulette you're playing. What would be a third wager? I'm trying to think of something that's kind of like,
I mean, bad sci-fi and anime. He's kind of hit the two big bases,
right?
But there's got to be, would offend me.
There's got to be like maybe Saint Elsewhere. You know, like if you want to go back, like I'm thinking something.
Or give me like highly regarded but dated. Oh, okay.
Like I bet NYPD Blue hasn't aged very well. Stuff like that. Like someone commissioned us to watch like the pilot episode and two other episodes of NYPD Blue. We'd be like, ah.
Yeah.
Why so much Caruso ass?
I just want you to watch this part of the episode 900 times.
Right. And you know how like we used to like so much cop shows about just cops vigilante style beating the shit out of perps?
Yeah.
And like how
I was a huge fan of The Shield.
Right.
That's basically all that show is.
But even then, in The Shield, like I think that was part of like at what point do you turn against.
Right. Vic Mackey. Yeah.
Yeah. But where like, you know, like that's the world keeps changing and so does art. And sometimes it's hard to go back and appreciate that stuff. But. Thank you for making the attempt, Brian. We'll be back the next time with another Commission podcast. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.